Hello, Fleetwood Mac fade out, Fergus and Zoe fade in. And they play a special role here in the community in Tunbridge Wells and Tunbridge. So, Fergus, tell me a little bit about the charity you belong to.
Yes, so we are Tunbridge and Tunbridge Wells Community First Responders. So we're a group of volunteers that provide a community response for the ambulance service. And alongside that, we also raise awareness of public access defibrillators and train the public in how to deliver CPR and resuscitation if the need ever arose.
So how do you assist the ambulance service? Do you go out on the ambulance?
No, so we've got six volunteers in Tunbridge and Tunbridge Wells at the moment. We're trained by the ambulance service and we then make ourselves available in our free time, and we're dispatched by the ambulance service to 999 calls that are in the community, near where we live, near where we work. Generally, more critical calls where time is really of the essence, and generally we arrive on scene before the ambulance and deliver that initial care whilst we're waiting for the ambulance to arrive.
So what happens if you're working and you get a call? That's
depends on who you work for, I think. So we've got some great employers that are allowing their staff to respond from work to the more critical calls. The majority of us, we just respond evenings and weekends when we're available, really, so outside of working hours. But we're not on call 24/7, so we just make ourselves available when we can, really.
So you let the ambulance service know when you're available?
Exactly, yeah.
Because I think we met down at Tunbridge Castle last year after COVID was sort of lifted for the Lions community fete.
Yeah, that's it. So as a charity, we also work to train the public in CPR. We can't get to every call, so we want people to have those kind of vital skills to help people in the first few minutes. So we go to events like that and deliver free CPR training and awareness on public access defibrillators and fundraise to put more public access defibrillators out into the community. So we've got, as well as our volunteers that respond, we've got volunteers like Zoe, who's here today, helps us out with our events and with our fundraising and that side of things.
Yeah, we'll come on to Zoe's role a little bit later. Just going back to the defibrillators, we see them popping up in telephone boxes, on village halls, church halls, and so it's your responsibility to go and train people on them?
Yeah, I think the really important message that we always try and get across is that you don't have to be trained to use a defibrillator. So all of the defibrillators that you see out in the public can be used by anybody. As soon as you switch them on, they talk to you, they give you instructions very clearly, tell you exactly what to do. They're automated, so you don't have to know what you're doing at all. You just follow the instructions and press the buttons that they tell you to press. It's really, really important that we get as many of them out there as we can into the community. And I've brought some statistics with me today, and the one that we often highlight is that according to some research, that if a defibrillator is used in the first 3 to 5 minutes of somebody being in a cardiac arrest, then the survival rate's around 74%. Now that's compared to a survival rate of less than 10%.
Wow.
Normally of somebody suffering a cardiac arrest. On average, it's taking around 8 minutes for ambulance services to attend these emergency calls. And at the moment, in this country as a whole, only 3% of these incidents happen within the retrieval distance of one of these publicly accessible defibrillators. So the more of them we can get out there, it really will save lives.
They're not cheap, though, are they?
Certainly not, no. So we, when we put our defibrillators out in the community, we put them in these locked cabinets. So you might have seen them on churches, pubs, and the like. Normally bright yellow boxes. They actually have to have an electrical supply to keep the defibrillator warm, to keep the battery going. So in total, it costs us around £1,500 for each defibrillator and cabinet that we put out into the community. And then every 2 to 3 years, we have to replace batteries and consumables, and that's another cost of around £150 each time we have to do that. So means we've got to do lots of fundraising to keep it going.
Well, we're going to come back to that, onto fundraising shortly. But you say these cabinets are locked. So how, if I see somebody having a cardiac arrest, and I find I've got defibrillator there and the box is locked?
Yeah, so that's a really important point. So if you're ever in the situation where somebody's having a cardiac arrest, we always say the most important thing is to call 999 and get the professionals on their way, as it were. And every minute makes a difference. If there is a defibrillator nearby, then the ambulance control room will tell you exactly where it is. They've got a database that they can access, and they will also give you a code to access the box. So it keeps the defibrillators secure. Fortunately, thefts are very rare, but they do happen, as does vandalism, unfortunately. But also, it encourages people to make that call to 999 rather than, in a moment of panic, running off to get a defibrillator, and in the meantime, the patient's not getting the help that they need. So,
and Zoe is going to tell me a little bit what it costs to be, you know, for the equipment, and her role as a volunteer fundraiser.
We worked it out as it costs about £1,200 to put one of our CFR volunteers, so one of the ones that go out and do respond for the ambulance. But then we also spend £1,500 on putting the public access defibrillators out, and we do quite a lot of them. We've also had expenses like buying new training equipment this last year and that kind of thing, because we really wanted to push doing the CPR training. So we've had to raise quite a lot of money for that. So yeah, it's quite a lot of money that we have to try and raise each year.
So how do you raise the money?
Well, a couple of things. We do look for getting some grants. We recently got a grant that Fergus is going to tell you what it was.
Yeah, we got a grant from the Skinners company charity, Lady Neville Charity, to support a new CFR volunteer who's just joined the team, Gemma, based in Southborough. So every new responder that we get, like Zoe said, it's about £1,200 that we've got to find for their equipment and uniform and things like that.
So do the volunteers make any contribution themselves to uniform equipment?
We don't like to ask our volunteers to do so, but many of them offer or like to. Certainly anyone can make a donation, but there's no requirement on any of our volunteers to make any contributions. But we ask them all to contribute to the volunteering and fundraising efforts.
Yeah.
So it's volunteer your time, not your pocket.
Yeah, so somebody who's on a very low income but wants to help in the community can volunteer, and there's going to be no pressure on them.
Yeah, no pressure. There's no, nothing that they would have to pay out themselves at all. It would just be your time. And, for me, I didn't have the time, or I don't really have the time to volunteer for the ambulance like Fergus does. I don't have the time to commit to responding, but I do have the time, like on a weekend, to go to a fete. So we're going to the Lions Castle fete in Tunbridge on the 12th of June.
Yes.
And I'll probably be there, and I can help raise some awareness of the charity, do some fundraising, and there'll also be people like Fergus out there doing some CPR training that day. So yeah, that's kind of where I stand with the charity.
Yeah, there's a lot of events coming up over the Jubilee weekend, so you can't be everywhere. I haven't heard yet whether we're going to be at the Castle Fete. We were talking about it. Well, I just kept my head down low.
It's quite a sensible thing to do.
Yeah, it's a great event, and although we're relatively new as a charity, we've had an established community first responder team in Tunbridge for a number of years, and they've been attending the Lions Castle Fete for many years, fundraising for the team. More recently, we've started doing more kind of CPR awareness and getting involved with the defibrillators. But as a team of responders for the ambulance service, we've been around for some time.
So there are other bodies you can apply for grants for, like the Rotary?
Yeah, so we've got lots of opportunities in Tunbridge and in Tunbridge Wells. So we're really well placed for those things. I think often it's just our volunteers having the time to go and to seek these things out and find out what opportunities are out there. So as Zoe said, we're always keen for new volunteers to join us, not just to assist on the responding side of things, but to help us out with the fundraising and bring those funds in.
So tell me about some of the things you've been up to.
Yeah, so we've currently got six responder volunteers in the team across Tunbridge and Tunbridge Wells, and as I was saying earlier, we just make ourselves available to ambulance control room when we've got some free time, and we get dispatched to whatever calls there are local to us. So I was on call yesterday afternoon and evening myself, and popped out a couple of times to a young baby, and then to an older gentleman who'd collapsed in the town centre. So like you say, we're often the first to arrive on scene and administer that kind of assistance in the first few minutes. What we're around to do a lot of the time is provide the vital first minutes response to cardiac arrest events. It's our kind of primary purpose, if you like. The key statistic that you often hear is when somebody's in cardiac arrest, their chances of survival decrease by 10% for every minute that goes by without any intervention. So we can't be everywhere. We certainly can't be everywhere within a couple of minutes. So we also like to try and train the general public in how to help. Obviously, if you ever have to dial 999 for one of these incidents, you'll get talked through it by the ambulance controller, by the 999 operator. But we like to promote that anyone can do it. We do training events with a whole range of people of all ages and all kind of sizes and abilities and etc. And anyone can do it. And your intervention really can make a difference and save somebody's life. So we've got Staying Alive playing in the background now, and it's a good song to remember, because if you're ever in a situation where you have to deliver those chest compressions, this is the kind of rate that you want to be delivering those compressions at. So we always tell people to sing this in their heads, not out loud, and have that going in your head whilst you're delivering these chest compressions, so that you know you're delivering them at the right sort of speed, and it's just a case of pushing hard and fast, as they say. You really can't push too hard when you're delivering chest compressions, and people often ask, are you going to hurt the person? Are you going to break their ribs? I always say I'd rather wake up with a few broken ribs than not wake up at all. Yeah. So it is all about pushing hard and pushing fast, and keep going for as long as you can, and preferably until help arrives.
Talking during the break, when you were saying that you're going to schools, and you originally started telling them to sing Nelly the Elephant as they were doing it, and they all looked
just
at you blankly.
Just makes me feel old, yeah.
Yeah. But I suppose for many of them, Staying Alive by the Bee Gees is pretty old. So what modern songs have you got to get? Now I've thrown him on the spot.
That's a very good question.
That'll be the brainstorm later, yeah. I think.
I mean, really, we're looking at about twice a second. It's 110 a minute is what we're kind of looking for. So it's also worth saying that if you can get hold of a public defibrillator, which is what we really like people to be able to do, that also helps because they've got a metronome on there that gives you the speed. And again, if you phone 999, which is the first thing you should do in any of these events, they'll be able to tell you down the phone and they'll count 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, and that will give you the speed as well. So
people needn't be afraid of trying it or getting involved because all the help is there.
Absolutely. So I like my statistics. So there was a survey done a couple of years ago, and it found that more than 3/4 of people said that they wouldn't feel comfortable to act if they saw somebody in cardiac arrest. And given what we've talked about today with the chances of survival and the rapid reduction in the chances of survival without intervention, it's really important that we promote that anyone can do it, and also that anything that you do, if somebody is in that situation, will help them, and you really can't make the situation much worse than it already is. So give it a go and do your best, and you might save a life.
Fergus, what's next for us?
Yeah, so just going to talk a little bit about what our volunteers do with the ambulance service, and if anyone listening is interested, we're going to be reopening recruitment for community first responder volunteers later in the year. All of the recruitment is done centrally by the ambulance service, which is in this area, South East Coast Ambulance Service, or SECAM, and they train all of our volunteers, and then they manage us going out to emergency calls, etc. So as a team, we've now got 6 volunteers, so we have 1 join us very recently, and over the last year our volunteers have volunteered more than 1,000 hours on call for the ambulance service, and in that time they've attended just under 500 emergency 999 calls, so 488 calls as a team. Of that, 140 of those calls were what we call a category 1 call, which is the most kind of immediate response, so that is things like cardiac arrests and choking, somebody that's unconscious and not breathing properly. So the other calls that we attend will be things like falls or potential strokes. We also go to people with breathing difficulties. So we've been seeing quite a lot of that recently, obviously, with the pandemic. COVID is still very much out there. We do go out to patients who are suffering with the effects of COVID. And we carry oxygen with us, so we can deliver oxygen therapy if people are suffering breathing difficulties. We also carry some other drugs to help people with asthma, COPD and things like that. And we're there really as an initial response. What that means at the moment, where, as has been in the news a lot recently, the ambulance service are really, really struggling to get out to patients as quickly as they'd like to. Sometimes we're just there to sit with people, reassure them and wait with them until an ambulance arrives. And sometimes we're going rushing in and delivering CPR and trying to save a life. And other times we might be sitting and having a cup of tea with somebody and reassuring them and waiting with them for an ambulance to arrive to assist them further, and everything in between, really.
Have you found, it's been a touchy subject on ambulance waiting times, Have you found yourself waiting there for some time for someone to come and help?
Yeah, certainly it's a real challenge at the moment, and it's quite complex in terms of the reasons why, but certainly a case that we're seeing waiting times going up still, and availability of ambulances is definitely reduced. So really in that situation, we're asking people to really think before they dial 999, for an ambulance. We've got a great 111 service now. In this area, that service is run by the ambulance service as well, by CCAM. And we really want to make sure that we're reserving 999 and the emergency ambulance service for those emergency calls when it really is an emergency ambulance that's required. And in other situations, asking people to kind of think about their options, use 111, use the website 111.nhs.uk, and, you know, use their GP and A&E if they can travel there themselves. Mm.
Well, I have to say, I did use 111 service myself and then got transferred to 999.
Yeah, so we do see a lot of that, and yeah. It's important to note, actually, because people think if they're not sure which number to call, then call 111 and they'll make that decision for yeah. you. Because, like you say, if you need 999, then that's I'll where you'll you. End up.
Yeah. And the ambulance was there in 10 minutes, which was good.
Good, good.
But that was all the symptoms of COVID and all the suffering of COVID, but it was a bad chest infection.
Yeah.
But it was nasty. It did put the frighteners on. So, any more statistics you want to share?
I've got a list of statistics in front of me here, and I'm just looking at them, wondering if I've said everything that I need to say. But I think I have. I mean, one thing that we would say is that we, as Zoe was talking about earlier, we do regularly hold free events for anyone to come along and learn how to do CPR, how to use a defibrillator if you want to get hands-on with a training version of a defibrillator and see how they work and what they do. In our first year as a charity, we trained more than 200 people in CPR and defibrillator awareness, and we've got a number of events coming up this year. So we direct anyone to our website, which is ttwcfr.com. So we're the Tunbridge and Tunbridge Wells Community First Responders. So ttwcfr.com. And on there you can see all about our upcoming events and come along, meet some of the team and learn how to do a bit of CPR. And you never know, it might save a life one day.
And if you don't remember that website address, then Fergus and Zoe are going to make details available to us to put on our website, so there'll be a link from us to them.
And we're on all the social media channels and everything else. So have a look and see if you can find us. And we're always looking for more volunteers to join the team, not just as responders going out on call, but also with our fundraising team and delivering our CPR training and awareness.
And just to add to all this, we do, if you're a pub or a shop or somewhere and want to host a defib or want help raising money for a defib, then do let us know. We went to a couple of pubs last year, didn't we? We went to the Allotment Pub and the Robin Hood, and we helped with the fundraising and we helped with the installation of the defibs, and we also provided some CPR training there as well. So, and we have done that in other
We've gone into businesses, schools and community groups, and we've worked with local scout groups to deliver CPR training with them. And anyone that's kind of interested in any of those things, whether it's a business, community group or anything like that, then get in touch, and we're always happy to help wherever we can.
Thank